6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Each one is for a kill. And believe it or not, Tony, I was really hoping you wouldn't make the cut.
For a minute, I really thought it was you and me against the world.
We're not fighting the same battles, Tony.
Two gearhead orphans, trying to do right by our fathers. We sound the same to me.
The difference between you and me. That you can't see the difference between you and me.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Kirk.
And this is House Podcastica, What If Edition.
This week, we're covering What If Season 1, Episode 6, What If Killmonger Rescued Tony Stark?
Welcome back to the podcast, Kirk. It was really fun having you on that first one, and I'm glad you wanted to come back.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a gas, and I'm honored to have been back again, so... Thanks again.
So what have you thought of the series so far?
I think it's fantastic. Yeah. It's fantastic from all sorts of, you know, directions. And I think the other thing that I'm just really grooving on is, and I think you'll probably relate to this too, being a comic book nerd and a kid who grew up reading Marvel and superheroes and stuff. It's like, we have a regular Marvel experience almost every week now, you know, for the whole year and maybe hopefully going forward. And it's like, instead of going to the comic book store and getting my books, I can sit down on a Wednesday or a night and get a big dose of the Marvel universe, you know, and it's just like how I remember my comics, with stories that are in and of themselves exciting, awesome, make me think, give me emotions, everything else, but they all tie into a greater, larger story and crossover. And I mean, that's what I loved about my comics, you know? I mean, my first favorite series was the Avengers versus the Defenders, you know what I mean? I don't know if you remember that from like 1970s, you know? And it was like the ultimate crossover. But anyway, so yeah, I'm really enjoying that.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that Marvel has done so well that hasn't really been captured until Marvel is, giving you the feeling of the comics really being on the screen. I mean, Superman with Christopher Reeve, sure, and Batman with Michael Keaton, but like you're saying, the whole crossover aspect, the shared universe aspect, and yeah, and you get the same kind of feeling. And I love, like, you know, the series are great where you get to delve into one character's story for 8 weeks or whatever, you know, a group of characters. But What If is really fun too, just to see what are they going to throw at us this week? What new heroes are we going to get to see? It's really fun.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, like, and the different formats, again, remind me of my experience growing up with comics, because, you know, you'd have, you know, giant size, special standalone giant size issues. You'd have Treasury Edition episodes, you know, or issues that were super huge. You know, you'd have crossovers, you'd have standalone books,
limited series,
you'd have
annuals,
limited series. Yeah. You have, you know, Marvel team up, you know, things like that. And it was just, and like you're saying, it's the same thing, you know, we're just getting these different doses of Marvelness, and it all relates to each other. And it's great. And I love the fact that this one's animated, you know,
they can do anything. So before we get into this week's episode, I also want to ask, what have you had a favorite so far?
Yeah, a couple. I think my it's close, though. You know, it's close, because I've really liked each one more. I think my three most favorite, and it's hard for me to put them in numerical order, but I would say the Guardians of the Galaxy episode was probably one of the best, and mainly for me, because it just so transformed the world because of this change. Yeah. You know, you transformed the universe because of this change. And
my favorite moment was when Thanos sat down and was just like shooting the shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And you got to see, it really took the idea of we could make all sorts of things happen differently. Yeah. and really fleshed out. Whereas the Captain Carter, it was just one person really changed a little bit, Steve Rogers, because he started, you know, became piloting the robot or whatever, but this was like, holy shit, Thanos changes and Yondu changes and the whole attitude of what the Reapers, or not Reapers, but
the Ravagers,
yeah. You know, what they do and how they go about what their morals and standards, you know, just everything just changed. It was great. Nebula.
We thought it was a big FU to Peter Quill, the whole episode. Look what happens when you're not there.
Right. But it was great, because then at the end, with the little scene of him at the Dairy Queen, it was like, oh, you're all so happy because look what a better universe this became. But actually, you've now created an even bigger threat. You know what I mean? Because he's going to end up going with his dad and becoming, you know, part of Ego.
Right.
So, oh my God. Yeah. And even that was just great. So I'd say that's definitely probably my one or two, three. The Doctor Strange episode, for the same reason, was just fantastic. I mean, the idea of the, you know, what if this guy, you know, took this Sorcerer Supreme role and, you know, let his personal emotional issues drive him and obsess him with it, and instead of what he ended up doing, you know, and his Hippocratic Oath and everything else, and what someone would do for love, and it just how dark it went was awesome. And then of course the zombies episode, just a personal favorite, you know. So those three are my top three. I don't know, I'd probably put the Guardians first, but then it's kind of a tie for second.
Yeah, for me, the zombies and the Guardians are close, but I think I'd put the Guardians one first too, just barely though. But I feel like, you know, we've talked about how Marvel now has X-Men and Fantastic Four, and I'm sure those will roll out in the movies in due time, and they probably wouldn't want to do anything with it in What If until they've debuted on screen, you know, on the big screen. But I do think it would be fun to just maybe stick one character in one episode, you know?
I think it would be cool. It would be cool for them to create or introduce a new character in this mode or this format, and then bring them into live action. Yeah, no, I agree.
Well, they may. Some, like Captain Carter might show up or something. You know.
Well, they're doing it with Disney Plus. You know, yes, yeah, you're right. Yeah. Captain Carter might be it, and actually, she probably will, because the rumors are pretty hot and heavy that she's going to be in in the next Doctor Strange movie. Yeah, but they're doing it with a number of the Disney Plus characters. For instance, not Captain Marvel. What's it? Ms. Marvel.
Oh yeah,
is going to have her Disney series plus before she's then in the movie.
I'd like to see Netflix Daredevil come into the movies.
The rumors are hot and heavy that's coming. That it's would either be awesome. You know, he's either not only Daredevil but also the Kingpin.
That'd be cool.
Oh my God, and he was fantastic. He was definitely him and the Purple Man were the best villains from the Netflix series.
I like Purple Man even better.
Yeah, and I think if they kept Jessica Jones, Daredevil, and Luke Cage from those shows and their villains, and stuff, I think that would be awesome.
There's one you conspicuously left out there.
Iron Foot.
We won't talk about that.
Iron Foot in mouth as opposed to Iron Fist.
All right. That's great. Let's get into this week's episode. It's our top five highlights for What If Season 1, Episode 6, What If Killmonger Rescued Tony Stark. Just in general, before we get into our points, how'd you like it?
Probably one of my least favorite.
Didn't love it.
You know, for a lot of different reasons. I felt like story-wise, it kind of fell back to the Agent Carter thing, where we had one kind of main change and how that affected. But basically, everything kind of rolled out the way it did, except for, of course, you know, in the end, he's becoming the Black Panther.
Yeah.
But I just didn't feel like, in contrast to Marvel Zombies, the Doctor Strange one, or the Guardians of Galaxies, we didn't get the level of kind of wild changes to the universe as a result of the, you know, and you're talking about Iron Man not being there, you know what I mean? I mean, that's
Iron Man's not doing too well in these.
No, he's
died in every single one that he's in.
Well, maybe that's purposeful. Maybe they're doing that on purpose. Maybe he's
the Kenny of the What If.
Well, it's kind of like if you look at the
you bastards.
Yeah. If you look at the Loki series and the TVA and the fact that Loki was supposed to fill a certain story and he had a certain role to play and he doesn't go beyond that in the timeline.
Yeah.
Maybe they're saying the same thing with Tony. You know, Tony has a certain contribution to the timeline, and then it's over.
Yeah, because he died in the main timeline too.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I liked it. I watched Iron Man and Black Panther in the last couple of days just to get ready.
Yeah,
for this.
I watched Black Panther again. Yeah. I should have watched Iron Man again.
And it was you know, I had already seen that movie twice when it came out and liked it. But for some reason, it hit me a lot harder this time. Just I could really see, for example, why people responded to Killmonger, you know, because he's definitely you can debate his methods, but where he's coming from is a really powerful place. He wants justice, you know, and I was really vibing with that. I don't like his methods, but I can understand that place of anger, you know, and I think that's a really powerful thing to put in a Marvel movie. And so then to have basically, like you're saying, he's like the Peggy Carter. I mean, he didn't change. He's the exact same in this What If as he was in the movie. So I don't know. I liked it. I thought it was interesting and exciting and another kind of tragic one. And I thought it was pretty interesting, pretty exciting. But anyway, let's get into our points.
Well, you kind of kicked off my first point because I agree with you. I think Killmonger is probably one of the best Marvel villains to date overall.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I think Thanos is probably my favorite and probably the best. But there's a reason for that, and that's because he had basically an entire film, Infinity War, that was about him.
Yeah.
And about his mission and about, you know, all of his background and motivation and everything else. And the more you get of that of a villain, I think the more invested you become in them, and the better villain they are, you know.
And they feel like real people.
Yes. And I think Killmonger, you know, I think his backstory, his motivations, like you said, the injustices, you understand his anger.
Yeah.
And you see, you feel it's legit, and I agree.
And share some of his frustrations with like Wakanda not coming out and helping oppress people and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Sitting back and just, you know, hiding, watching from afar when they have all this power that they could actually, you know, make change. Mm-hmm. And how aggravating and angering that must be. So, yeah, I think it makes him really rich and makes you as a viewer conflicted about whether to like him, not like him, you know, and those are the kinds of emotions you want your villain to elicit. Mm-hmm. So, I agree. For me, he's a great villain.
Well, my number five is kind of related. It's about how both Tony and Killmonger in Iron Man and the Black Panther compare to them in this episode. And like I said, I went back and watched Iron Man, and he's a hotshot celebrity weapons manufacturer who says things like, "They say the best weapon is one you never have to fire. I respectfully disagree. I prefer the weapon you only have to fire once. That's how Dad did it. That's how America does it." You know, he's just really into it. And then he gets attacked and injured and held captive. And he also sees how his weapons are being sold or given to bad guys and used on innocent people. And it really changes him. And there's this press conference afterwards where he's really shaken up, and he's asked if what happened to him changed him. And he says, "I saw young Americans killed by the very weapons I created to defend them and protect them. And I saw that I had become a part of a system that is comfortable with zero accountability." And that's when he announces that he's shutting down the weapons manufacturing division of Stark International. Here he says, "Well, I saw young Americans killed by the very weapons I created to protect them. And I realized we have to do better, build bigger, and fight better for them, which is why I'm bringing Lieutenant Eric Stevens, the Navy SEAL who saved my life, as Stark Industries' new chief security officer." So you get to see what would happen if he never had that, taken down a peg that he desperately needed.
I think it was the taking down a peg, but don't underestimate the importance of the relationship that he builds with the doctor that's also prisoner with him. Mm-hmm. That guy saves his life, and that guy has family that he was taken from. And there's all of this personal growth that Tony goes through working with him. And
he sacrifices
that guy made. Yeah. Right. Sacrifices himself. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that transforms him more than anything.
Yeah. And the Watchers said something about how a hero is forged through challenges or whatever it was he said, through adversity and stuff. And even the little thing about when Tony's trying to figure out how to power these combat drones and says, "What about if we miniaturize the arc reactor?" Nah, that's a dumb idea. That's an illustration of that, where sometimes you need to be desperate, or as they say, necessity is the mother of invention, you know, before you're actually going to go through the trouble to do something.
Yeah. No, that's a good observation. Yeah.
But then we have Killmonger, who's very much the same as I mentioned earlier. I mean, he is frustrated that Wakanda's not helping the oppressed, and because he was born in America and his father was a Wakandan spy who started to sympathize with people who were disadvantaged here and started trying to get them vibranium, and then the King T'Chaka came. I'm just repeating this in case people don't remember the movie. King T'Chaka came over and actually killed Killmonger's father and left Killmonger there, abandoned him. So he feels abandoned. He's growing up with firsthand experience of what it's like to be disadvantaged. His father's been killed, so he's just angry as shit. And he decides to build himself up into this weapon and then use his strength and power to go. And now he had the same goal here as he had in the movie, which is to become king of Wakanda and then send off all the vibranium and resources to oppress people so they could rise up against their oppressors and kill them, basically. But the difference is that in the movie, it happened later. I mean, he has a long-term deceitful plan in both, but in the movie, T'Chaka gets killed by Baron Zemo's men in Captain America Civil War. So That means that T'Challa is going to be the king. Killmonger has a more direct plan. He's going to go in and challenge T'Challa to fight to death for the crown. And in the show, because it's earlier, T'Chaka is still alive. So he decides to instead kill T'Challa and frame someone else for it and then get in good with the king so he can be next in line. And so all the details of what happens are basically him doing that. He lures T'Challa to America by using Tony Stark to, you know, go and get some vibranium to make these weapons and then leak the information to Wakanda that this guy, Claw, has stolen the vibranium and is going to use it for American weapons. And then when he lures T'Challa out, he kills him and blames James Rhodes for it, and then betrays and kills Claw and brings him back as kind of a present to King T'Chaka, because Claw's a longtime enemy. And then he's pitting the two against each other. The Americans think that the Wakandans killed Tony Stark and Rhodes, and Wakanda thinks that the Americans killed T'Challa. So that leads to all these anime combat drones coming over, and he convinces T'Chaka to let them in just so he can go. And I think that was the last part. He'd gotten into T'Chaka's good graces, but the reason why he let the drones in, the combat drones, was so that he could go and fight and defeat them. And that's when T'Chaka said, okay, you get to be the next Black Panther, which I presume means that he's in line to be king, right? If you're Black Panther, that means you're in line to be king.
Yes.
Yeah.
T'Chaka became Black Panther. Actually, T'Chaka became Black Panther first, only became king after his father died.
T'Challa. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. T'Challa. So in both cases, he's just trying to become the king of Wakanda so that he can give all these weapons and resources to everybody. But in What If, it looks like he's going to succeed. I mean, it felt like a bit of a cliffhanger at the end there, because he's in line to be king. He's become the Black Panther, but Shuri knows about him and she's talking to Pepper Potts, and also General Ross is about ready to send missiles over there. So it was kind of it felt like a cliffhanger ending. It could just be like, okay, this is sort of a tragic thing that's going to happen and we don't need to see it. But I don't know. It felt like a bit of a cutoff right in the middle of the story.
Well, I would respond to that two ways. One is, I agree. I do think it felt like a cliffhanger. And I think that was done possibly on purpose.
Yeah.
And I'll talk about why I think that. And then secondly, he is going about things differently though, because he's not the one making the decision. Still, the king is still there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more, he's like the kind of the guy, like almost like in a,
he's in the shadows,
Game of Thrones kind of court behind the scene trying to net. Yeah. Yes. Right.
I mean, I guess I don't think he could, just because what he did with T'Challa was he used tribal ritual to challenge him for the crown in a duel, to where you either die or you yield. Right. I don't know if he could do that with T'Chaka. I don't know.
Well, he'll probably take T'Chaka out, but first he had to have him ordain him becoming Black Panther.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Then I think the line is set up for him then.
Yeah.
But regardless, so that's different. Also, the he's in a direct war now between Wakanda and the U.S. That's very different than what he was trying to do in the Black Panther movie, where he was just sending out weapons to arm other oppressed peoples and have them rise up, which is, it's very different, I think, in terms of a military type of approach and strategy.
Absolutely. I mean, I guess I just assumed that he would still do that in this reality, but they didn't mention it. So,
well, it's
maybe not
clear. It's not clear. He doesn't seem as motivated in the What If around injustice and the fact that he wants to, you know, help people of color or oppressed people, you know, stand up against oppressors all across the world. That didn't quite come across the way it did in the film.
He mentions something about it at the end when he said, what the hell was it? Damn it. I can't remember now. I can't remember, but I thought he did mention something. He said to Rhodes, you wear the uniform of your oppressors. And then Oh, no, no. Then when he was talking to T'Challa in like the spirit realm at the end, T'Challa said, "You want to end suffering by creating more suffering." I can't remember the exact
conversation. He said basically you're becoming what you say you hate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you know, a warring, violent, oppressive, you know, and so it just seems a little different, a little less revolutionary and a little bit more, power hungry.
Yeah. You know what I mean? He did say something about you need power.
Right. But
yeah. I mean, I you're right. I still definitely think that his methods in the movie were not going to lead to anything good either. Just going to cause a lot of death.
Well, I have mixed feel. I've got a couple of points here on that. Since this ties in, I'm going to jump to this one, which is, I definitely agree with you on that, but and that I felt the stand felt more like a standalone episode than the others. But, and again, this is a kind of a possible spoiler for those that don't want to be possibly spoiled. And it's not anything I know for sure other than what I've seen in previews. But so just as a warning, if people don't want, I know that the one of the main villains in the second half of the season, I don't know if it's the main villain for the whole season or one episode or whatever, but is going to be Ultron.
Oh, cool.
And that therefore, you know, the way that he was originally brought to life was through vibranium and from Wakanda and all this kind of stuff. So I think that the Wakanda will play a larger part and possibly we will come back to Killmonger.
Oh, yeah.
And he will have to, you know, either unite with the other nations or other heroes in this fight, maybe. Or redeem himself somehow, which brings me to another point, which is I was kind of hoping, because I have my dreams of what will happen in Black Panther 2. I'm hoping they bring Killmonger back. And I know we saw him die and everything, but you got to remember he ate the Black Panther, you know, flower root thing that heals everybody. So he's got Black Panther powers and, in him. And then when they say that, you know, remember he says, I want you to just throw me into the ocean rather than put me in bondage because, you know, that great line at the end.
It was something like my ancestors who would prefer to...
Like my ancestors,
jump into the ocean rather than be put in chains or something like
live in bondage. And I'm guessing or I'm hoping that the main villain or the main conflict in Black Panther 2 is going to be Namor.
Oh, that'd be so cool.
And Atlantis, which they've hinted to at a couple different places and times throughout the movies, even from back in Iron Man 1 with the map on the wall behind Fury in the after credits thing. But, and you know, I could see a scenario where, you know, maybe he comes with them, but then he ends up turning on Namor and helping Wakanda, you know, repel this and redeems himself and wants to, you know, be a positive force in Wakanda and then ends up becoming the new Black Panther. I mean, they've got to find a new, you know, Shuri or Nakia, I think, will probably have the mantle of Black Panther as that when that movie opens. But they've got to find somebody to replace, you know, that actor and that role. You can't have the Marvel Universe. I mean, there's so many. I mean, you shouldn't have the Marvel Universe without a really strong Black Panther in it. And I think that the actor
Chadwick Boseman.
The guy that plays
Michael
Killmonger.
B. Jordan.
Michael B. I think he's fantastic. Yes. And I think because his background was so tortured and because, you know, and we are so conflicted about him as a villain that I could see him going through a redemption story arc and then becoming a good guy and people getting behind him. And I think he would be fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
am I just dreaming or what?
I don't know. I mean, before this What If episode, I had only thought about that briefly and thought, well, he's dead and it would be cheesy to bring him back to life. And then I dismissed it. But now that I told you, I've rewatched Black Panther, felt like the power of that character, even though I disagree with his methods, and that hearing you talk about it, I'm like, maybe we could get over the cheesiness of it real quick because he would be the best. that would be the best for sure. He's such a magnetic actor and his story is perfect for it.
Yeah. And he's not in the MCU anywhere else, you know? So it's fantastic as an actor. You know what I mean?
Not him, I would pick Shuri to just have the role.
Yeah. I think the thing that would be, I think either that or Nokia or Lupta, the actress.
Oh, yeah. I like Shuri.
Yeah, she's really good, too. Yeah, she's good. I like Shuri, too, but Shuri fills a really important function.
That's true.
And that's the tech person, the tech wizard, right. The genius. And now that Tony's gone, we have to have geniuses in this universe. You know
Tony
what I mean?
Did,
and
though.
She's definitely going to be... Yeah, you're right. He did.
Okay, that's great. I love it. I mean, it kind of fits in with my next point, which is just the sadness that I feel when I think about all these issues. And Marvel, the MCU is tackling big issues: oppression, racism, violence, war. Which, when you're showing people fighting on screen, that gives it some weight. Like, yeah, this is why people fight. And Tony, when Tony gets killed in this episode and Killmonger says, "We're not fighting the same battles, Tony." And he goes, "Two gearhead orphans trying to do right by our fathers. We sound the same to me." And Killmonger says, "The difference between you and me is that you can't see the difference between you and me." I just love that line.
Yeah. It's a great line.
It just shows depth of why he's fighting for what he's fighting. And then, you know, it was really sad, but there's this cycle of vengeance and retribution, or to see the montage with James Rhodes' coffin from above,
right?
The
that
American
was
flag.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
And then T'Challa's, which is super sad because Chadwick Boseman passed, and the letters on that said "Wakanda Forever." I read later. It just made me think in the movie, T'Challa lived and Killmonger died, and what you're left with there is. And then they open up Wakanda and open up a center and they agree to give aid and different things like that. And T'Challa was the kind of guy who said at the end, "Now more than ever, the illusion of division threatens our very existence on this earth. We all know the truth. More connects us than separates us. In times of crisis, the wise build bridges while the foolish build barriers. We must find a way to look after one another as if we were one single tribe." And I just love that, you know, I love that so much. That was another reason why I felt so strongly about Black Panther when I watched it recently. It's a comic book movie, but it's fucking strong. And that sentiment is something that I feel we need so much more of right now. You know, there's too much hate and division and violence. And so watching this episode, it made me really sad to see a force for that kind of sentiment wiped out.
Yeah. No, I agree.
and Iron Man too. I mean, in the movie, he changes and decides not to manufacture weapons anymore, and he's wiped out too.
And Steve is gone. And Steve too.
Yeah.
You know.
And I think some people are not digging on What If because they're seeing their heroes die over and over again. And I can understand that personally.
I can get that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't mind a sad ending every once in a while. Just kind of gives us license to grieve on something that's not real. It's just entertainment. But to get in touch with those feelings, and I'm getting a little deep here. But I do think it would be good to have an episode where things turn out good again, like the Guardians one. It's getting a little tragic.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it is. But I like that. It doesn't distract me. I think it if anything, it builds my devotion or commitment to or feelings for the characters, you know, because it's like, oh, my God, how I would really be bummed out if that's really what happened.
I'm relieved. This is not real. It's a what if.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like I like experiencing the pain, but then I also like the fact that it's not the real universe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, I mean, even when it is the real one, like Iron Man in Endgame, spoilers, that I still have that feeling of, well, at least this isn't the real world, but it's nice to get in touch with that kind of an emotion every once in a while. Just reinforces this caring feeling, you know? So,
cool.
What's next?
Well, let's see. Again, I was a little disappointed with this one more than others. And we've talked a little bit about that, but there were two specific things. One is my point three and one is my point four. Point three was, I don't know, maybe it's because of all the drones and the robots, but the for the first time, the art of it, the execution of the animation felt really stiff and the most CGI of them all so far for me. And it seemed like there were a number of scenes, as opposed to one or two, but a number of scenes that were actually like digitally traced from the film. You know, whether scenes or sets or environments, or because again, they were recreating, you know, the basically Iron Man 1 story.
And part of Black Panther when he throws Claw down in front of the Dora Milaje.
Yeah. So, it took me out of it whenever I start paying attention to the graphics, whether it's, you know, then I it takes me out of it. So I was a little disappointed. And also likenesses, like the Pepper character.
Yeah.
Wow. Not even close. Huh?
And the voice, neither.
Nah, not even. Although I will say that the voice actor for the guy that did Tony.
Yeah.
Nailed it. He nailed it. I thought he was fantastic. Much better than the fill-ins that they had for Cap or for Spider.
I think
Spider-Man.
He did great. He's done Iron Man in some of the animated series. And
he's great. And I thought he was really good.
I remember watching those thinking, oh, they got a guy who sounds kind of like Robert Downey Jr. His name is Mick Wingert, but he also sounds a bit like Jack Black to me, which is distracting. And
oh, really? I didn't hear that. Also, I didn't feel that.
He plays Po from Kung Fu Panda in like the Kung Fu Panda cartoon or something that, you know, that's on TV. And I'm like, yeah, he sounds like a combination of Jack Black and Robert Downey Jr. to me. I thought he was great. I thought he did it well, but he's not as right on for me as, and I know you don't agree, but the guy who played Steve Rogers, like, I can't even tell the difference.
Yeah,
with that guy.
I disagree.
But I do agree that Pepper Potts was not.
I felt like the guy that did the voice for Steve, for Cap, and the guy that did the voice for Spider-Man were not trying to sound necessarily like the character. This is their voice, their natural voice intonations and inflections were similar, and that's why they chose them. This guy felt to me like he was somebody that does a really good impersonation of Tony Stark and was doing that. And I don't know why I liked that better.
Yeah. The Killmonger guy was just dead on.
Yes. Well, wasn't he? Wait a minute. Wasn't. Yeah, that was him.
It's him.
That was the actor. No, you asshole trying to trick me.
All right. Anything else on that one about the animation?
Not about the animation, but then I had, I could go into my next one, or do you want
to? Oh, let's take turns.
I guess we go back and forth.
Yeah.
So, no, so I want to be, I want to do it all.
You can just take over. I'm going to go.
I just want to be a greedy
get
pig.
A drink and you just go ahead. Just kidding. My next one is, well, I've got two. Do you want to hear like who the voice actors were or points that I wasn't so happy with?
I don't know. It's up to you, boss.
Okay. So this is, I call it Department of Suspension of Disbelief. I only have a couple of points, but I'm not sure that I believe that even this like non-enlightened version of Stark would, after he found out that Killmonger killed James Rhodes, instead of reporting it to the authorities, he would keep the information to himself and just try to kill Killmonger, trap him in his place and kill him. That didn't seem like...
Yeah. Well, it seemed more like Tony of the MCU. It doesn't seem like Tony of that, given that storyline. He hadn't become a hero.
I mean, it's just a way to get yourself killed and have no one know who did it, you know? It seemed like a bit of a stretch to me.
Well, it was a bit of a stretch, but I think they were trying to say, hey, you know, this guy, even though he didn't go through what he went through and therefore he didn't become Iron Man, he had the potential, he always has the potential to become heroic.
Yeah, but is it heroic to trap him in your house and try to murder him?
Well, no, that's not. But it's kind of like him trying to settle the score or defend against this guy instead of saying, "Oh, I'm not the right person for this. Let me bring the authorities in to do this." It was kind of like, I can do this myself.
Well, my point is more that just to kill him, like, I don't know. It does. It seems pretty dark that you're gonna just try to lure this guy in and kill him. Maybe. Another one. Maybe I'm wrong about this, but in the moment, it was hard for me to believe that it would escalate so quickly. I mean, General Ross is a hawk and he is bomb happy, but he thinks the Wakandans killed Rhodes and Stark. So he's like, all right, let's get this Liberator drone program into production and immediately send him in to attack another country.
Yeah, well, not only I agree with that. That was just out there. Plus, on top of that, it's like, why would you take the time to try and build an entirely new weapon system when you've got nukes? Just nuke freaking Wakanda. Know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, at the end, he says we're gonna. They have their Jericho missiles ready to.
Right.
And that's the missile that Stark was demoing at the beginning of Iron Man. The Jericho missile. I don't know if those are nukes or what they are, but
no, they didn't look like nukes.
The last one is also after Wakanda had spent so many generations hiding from the world. I mean, that's the plot of the first movie. They're trying to get the king to agree to come out, but he doesn't want to. He's even killed his brother and left young Killmonger there because he doesn't want to reveal Wakanda. Then at the end of this episode, he's like, okay, just let their drones in. And, you know, that would risk, it did end up opening them up to the world. So that seemed like a snap decision that I had a hard time believing he would make.
Yeah. That was my other big problem. Number four was, I think that T'Chaka was kind of clueless and it didn't feel like he would be that easily swayed or manipulated. He seems like in the movies, a really, really wise guy, really wise, smart leader, you know, and experienced, you know, and I don't think he would have fallen that easily. On the other hand, because he has so much guilt from what he did to Killmonger. It could potentially blind him in ways that, he wouldn't be blind to other people doing it or other people trying that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that was the only thing that that I thought, you know, possibly justified that. But I agree on that. I had problems with that.
I think, too, that because they have to cram so much into like a 35-minute episode that they kind of cut corners a little bit on some of that stuff. It's not set up as well as it could be.
How cool was it, though, to see Queen Ramonda as the general leading everybody into battle? That was awesome because, she has very little role in the film. But because this takes place, I don't know, 10 years, 5-6 years, something like that prior to the Black Panther movie, you know, she's still the general in charge of the army. Yeah, so I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that was cool. All right, is it?
I think that was. I think that was everything.
Okay.
Wait a minute. One other thing. I thought that they might. What I was actually hoping for was that the villain would actually turn out to be Claw, that they would make Claw become like the comic level Claw. Are you familiar with him with the Sonic Cannon and everything?
Yeah.
And I thought this would be a great opportunity for that to happen. And then I thought maybe, you know, Killmonger would end up having to save Wakanda from Claw, who has become so powerful. But they just kept it dark with him.
I don't think he had his sonic cannon, did he?
Because he hadn't experienced. I don't think he had it in that. No.
Yeah, I don't remember. Did we see
Black Panther takes place? Yeah, because that takes place in Ultron.
In Avengers Ultron.
Okay.
I liked him. I mean, he's big in the Secret Wars, the original Marvel superhero Secret Wars. Claw's in that a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
He's made of sound, I think, in that.
Yeah, he's a wild villain.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, that's cool. A few things that connect it to the movies that, like you mentioned, the opening in the back of the limo, that's straight out of Iron Man, the first movie of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And
the opening sequence with the military too, where he's riding in the military. Hey, can I take my picture with selfie? Oh, yeah. I thought you said
throwing
limo.
Up gang signs. Oh yeah, right. Why did I think limo? You're right. It's like a military van.
It's a Humvee.
It feels like limo the way he's acting.
The way he's treating it like a limo. That's for sure.
Yeah. So and then they get attacked, and he's like, "Give me a gun," and they're just stay here, Mrs. Stark. But where it differs is you see that bomb come down that says Stark Industries on it, and in the movie it blows up, and that's what sends the shrapnel into
and
gets injured. But here, Killmonger appears and grabs it and throws it away. So that's what was different. And it makes sense that Killmonger might encounter Tony there. Well, we find out later that he's done it purposefully because he found out it's all part of his orchestration. But we also know that he's an American Black Ops soldier.
Right.
And then I forgot that we'd been seeing the Ten Rings organization since the very first Marvel Cinematic Universe movie. Because I watched Shang-Chi recently and loved it.
Don't spoil me. Don't spoil me.
Oh, okay. You haven't seen it yet. Okay. Well, I was going to ask.
Because of the pandemic, some stuff going on here, I can't do that. I can't expose myself like that. So I'm waiting for it.
Yeah. Well, Killmonger has a big part in that movie. I'm just kidding.
Oh, shit.
We see Christine Everhart again, who was in Iron Man and shacked up with Tony and challenges him a lot in public. Yeah. And she's been in What If and a couple other Marvel movies as the news reporter. Killmonger reveals in the press conference that Obadiah Stane had set up the attack on Tony. And we saw all that play out in the first Iron Man. When he talks about the power source for the drones and Tony says, if we can miniaturize an arc reactor, no, that's a dumb idea. Then Killmonger suggests vibranium, and Tony says, my father used it all. I think he's talking about Howard Stark using vibranium to make Captain America's shield.
Right.
What little they had, because they don't know about Wakanda at that point and their huge store of vibranium.
Right.
This is a little out there, but in the Iron Man comics, he does develop a version of the armor for a while there that doesn't need him to be inside, so he's remote controlling it. Did you know that?
They did that in the movies, too.
Did. And he even had the same bracelet on in the movies that he has here.
Yeah.
The Stark sonic taser that Killmonger uses on T'Challa is the same, I think, tech that Obadiah Stane used on Tony in Iron Man, where he paralyzed him and pulled that arc reactor from his chest.
Cool.
And similar to how Killmonger did in Black Panther, he betrayed Claw, killed him, and bring his body to Wakanda. I think in Black Panther, that was more of a challenge to T'Challa showing, I could do the thing that you couldn't do, but here it's more of a way of just getting in good with King T'Chaka. We see General Ross, who's Hulk's ex-girlfriend, Betty Ross's father. And I think he tried to appropriate Tony Stark technology in Iron Man 2. I didn't go back and watch that one again, but it seems like he's always wanting to control and weaponize the heroes, the Hulk too.
Yeah. Well, the way we're heading in the MCU, it seems like he's going to put together a Dark Avengers or a
Thunderbolts.
Thunderbolts, yeah.
That would be cool.
Which will be very cool, yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know if they'll do it as a Disney Plus or if they'll do it as a movie.
Yeah,
I'm not sure which I'd prefer. My guess is they'll merge them into one, the whole Dark Avengers and the Thunderbolts concept.
Yeah,
which I kind of, I mean, I get, but I really like them both for different reasons. You know, independently.
If they could, I don't think they can, but if they could pull off a Thunderbolts the way Kurt Busiek did originally with a movie,
yeah,
that'd be incredible.
Yeah.
You know it would
be awesome. Yeah.
That'd be
something. They've got the cast, and it does seem like the character Val, who at the end of Winter Soldier, she's going around putting people together, and then end of Black Widow, we see her again. Yeah. And so they're definitely putting together some sort of a team
of anti-heroes slash villains.
Who kind of going to work behind the lines. Question is whether it'll be Thunderbolts or whether it'll be Dark Avengers.
I got two more. When Killmonger's trying to convince T'Chaka to let the combat drones through the Wakandan force shield, and he mentions that Americans murdered your son, and he says, I know what it's like to have someone taken from me, and if I had the chance to avenge my father, I wouldn't hesitate. That was a great line, because we know that's exactly what he's doing, and he right. knows that T'Chaka killed his father, but T'Chaka doesn't know that he knows that.
Yeah, but you would think that would have been a giveaway. Again, maybe the guilt is blinding him, but it just seems like T'Chaka is kind of just not picking up on the signals at all.
Yeah, I liked it.
It just reminded me too, and I'm getting old, so if I don't say these things when I remember them, I say this to my wife all the time. She's like, you're interrupting me. I'm like, yeah, but you don't understand.
Okay,
if I don't
okay.
tell you this now, I'm not. You're going to say, okay, what do you want to say? I'm going to say, I have no freaking idea.
I do the same thing.
But your point about it being a cliffhanger ending, there was another big part of that ending that was a cliffhanger. Pepper Potts and Shuri come together.
Yeah.
To fight against him or to resist right. him or to deal with the truth. And that was definitely left wide open.
I mean, on first watch, I thought, oh, it feels just like the zombie episode where I feel like they're going to have part two. But on second watch, it also kind of felt like the end of the episode where Hank Pym had been killing all the Avengers and they injected a note of hope in at the end where Nick Fury starts to uncover Captain America, and then Captain Marvel shows up and the Watcher starts talking about no matter how dark it gets, there's always hope or whatever, that it kind of might have just been a moment like that, you know?
I don't know, but maybe in the sense that, you know, what Fury's doing in that scene is he's saying, okay, I can't put this team together. I'm going to put another team together. I'm going to get an Avengers one by hook or by crook. You know what I mean? And they're doing the same thing.
I mean, I agree with you. It seems like the story's not completely told, but I could see that was just sort of a dark ending with a note of hope at the end.
Mm.
But I don't know.
I don't think so. I don't know. I think
whether or not it's
going to be anything they come back to this season, I don't know. Because we talked about last time the fact that they've announced that there will be a second season.
Yeah.
And so I'm pretty sure that the zombie... you know, the Marvel Zombies will be a episode next season. Maybe they're going to have, you know, this will be the Wakanda episode, you know, the follow-up.
Yeah, it could be. I could see it going either way. I really could.
Yeah.
All right. You got any more?
No.
Nope, nothing. Okay. No, that's okay. So I just had some random notes. The voices I usually like to mention. So returning was Michael B. Jordan as Killmonger, Chadwick Boseman, Don Cheadle as Rhodes, which originally Terrence Howard played him in the first Iron Man movie where this takes place, but they just stuck Don Cheadle in there because he's the current one.
Yeah, I think it would have been confusing. It would have been confusing to people. Yeah,
they asked Terrence Howard to come back just to do this one.
Yeah.
Danai Gurira, of course, is Okoye.
It's too bad that didn't work out because I think Terrence Howard is a larger... character actor, you know. I think
he was more fun.
I think he's also I just thought, you know, he fit the role better.
I like Don Cheadle but
does. I like Don Cheadle too, but he doesn't.
I don't like him in this role as much as I did Terrence Howard.
No, I don't. Yeah. I don't.
He's fine though. So. He's like that. Angela Bassett played Queen Ramonda.
His best line though was when he's like, wait a minute, if we can time travel, why don't we just go back to like baby Thanos? And then he does this whole visual thing where he's like choking him. That was and everybody's like, well, first the Hulk's like, first that's gross. That was
that's
awesome
a good point.
Yeah, he's got good comedic delivery.
Yeah he does. Angela Bassett played Queen Ramonda. John Connie as T'Chaka, Andy Serkis as Claw, Paul Bettany as Jarvis, which it's kind of jarring to think of him in this role as Tony Stark's AI, because that has expanded to become the Vision
right
since then. And he's such a big part of it now with But anyway, that was fun. And John Favreau is back as Happy, Leslie Bibb as Christine Everhart, now who had stand-ins. Mick Wingert played Tony Stark. Ozioma Akaga played Shuri. I don't know why Letitia Wright didn't come back. That was too bad. Beth Hoyt played Pepper Potts instead of Gwyneth Paltrow. Kiff Vandenhoevel played Obadiah Stane instead of Jeff Bridges. And Michael Patrick McGill played Ross instead of William Hurt. So some pretty big actors there.
See where Jeff Bridges has cancer?
No.
Yeah.
Just recently announced.
Yeah, sad.
Oh, man.
Hopefully he can beat that.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like lately it's more treatable than it used
to be. I think it absolutely has. Sometimes. But a lot of it, comes down to
where it is and how early.
Finding out, and getting it early. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that once it gets to a certain point, it's basically non-treatable.
Yeah, Norm MacDonald died.
Yeah, I know. So sad.
Yeah.
Howard Stern did a great tribute to him. Yes, was it yesterday or the day before? I don't know. I saw a bunch of it online. Yeah.
That's great.
Norm was one of those guys who's just really, really funny in a unique way. And I think he influenced a lot of comics over the years.
He's great. I love Norm MacDonald.
Yep.
Two more little notes. As soon as Claw called Killmonger boy, I thought, well, he's dead. Like, he's going to be dead within the next few seconds.
When he was said that was, he was in the car, right? Yeah. He goes, come on over here, boy.
Come
yeah.
over here, boy.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're dead.
Well, he does. He kills him right there, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
I wasn't at all surprised. I'm surprised it took him that long.
Well, he was a means to an end, and he had made it to the end, so there was no more means for him to be there.
If there was any hesitation, that erased it.
Exactly.
I was going to do this later, but...
That opening scene in the movie, because, again, I just rewatched last night the Black Panther in preparation for this. That opening scene with him where he's in the museum is so good. It's so good. He's such a great actor. You know what I mean? When he's looking at all the African art, and the woman comes over and she's all nervous and because, you know, she's like, is this guy for real or whatever? And then the way he just handles that whole scenario and corrects her and stuff like that. It was just really, really cool. Very evil. Very, again, just really made him a good villain.
Yeah.
Very dark.
He's a powerful dude.
But also was, again, a little glimpse of the kind of racism and biased treatment that people of color receive from white folks in authority. You know what
all
I mean?
All over the place, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't matter where you are.
I watched Friday Night Lights. Did you watch that series?
No, I know of it, but I didn't watch it.
It's really good. And
is he in that?
I think three seasons in, because it's about this football coach. And two or three seasons in, the coach goes to another school that's, you know, less economically supported and everything. And it's mostly black kids. And that's where Michael B. Jordan made his debut, as far as I know. And he became the star of the show pretty much. And he was really good. He was just a kid back then.
Yeah.
But then he went.
I know Creed was fantastic. Mm-hmm. That was a great movie. You know, I feel bad that, you know, he got kind of, you know, dropped into a horrible film with the Fantastic Four relaunch. Oh, my God.
Right. Yeah.
You know, but
nobody knows
that
about that anymore. I don't think impacted him too much.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
I don't know. See, I forget.
Sorry about that. and then just the last thing I have to say about this episode is it's interesting that the Watcher keeps getting clearer and clearer. You know, he was a silhouette.
Yeah.
And now he's, I think that's
Oh, they're definitely doing that on purpose. Yeah.
He's going to interfere.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the only thing Marvel's got to be careful about, and this is a problem in the comics as well, is that they've just, they introduce things that are, I don't know, what's the word I want? you know, for instance, the Watcher watches everything and knows, you know, and records everything and knows everything that's happened prior and blah, 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 blah. But then you get the TVA, who's also watching everything and controlling how things flow. And I mean, and it's kind of like, you know, the power structure, you know, then you got Celestials, you know what I mean? Yeah. And like, are they gods? Are they not gods? Are they what the, right. you know, it starts to get a little.
Entities and everything.
Yeah. And those and haven't even like the Beyonder and things right. that haven't even been introduced yet that are,
and
you know, that
Mephisto
are going
to.
And Galactus. And so it's, but yeah, it's, it gets a little muddy.
You kind of wonder, yeah, where are they all in relation to each other?
Yeah, I mean, if a Watcher knows about the TVA, why isn't he dealing with the TVA? On why isn't he watching? It's almost as if he's watching something that he knows is already pre-written, and you know what I'm saying? I guess because this is the multiverse now. That's
if he's like me, he watched it for a while and got bored with it and decided to give up on it.
anyway. I guess it's because actually, I guess they're. No, I'm answering my own question here because I guess they exist beyond the TVA. So in other words, the TVA was really set up to control the timeline of just our universe. Not you know what
because
I mean?
Because
we're
supposed to be the main. Well,
or
it's
no,
not
it was
us,
all
it's
universe.
Marvel. Well, yeah, but it's they're protecting the main, what they call the main timeline. The
main timeline, yeah.
And they're pruning all the other ones off, so there will only be one universe, multiverse.
No, then I didn't
but
answer
now
my
that's
own question,
ended.
Because again, that's
but,
still...
Well,
it's,
the Watchers, I mean, if you take this guy at his word, they don't do anything. They don't interfere. They just watch.
Yeah, but why? It's repeating. It's repeating.
what
right?
do you mean?
I mean... That's what Kang did. That's what he who waits or he who watches or whatever what the hell's his name here at the end.
Uh-huh.
He who remains.
Oh right, yeah.
Everything replays. Everything there's no the timeline is finite and
in
therefore everything so why are there watchers watching what just happened before?
Well, do you ever like to watch reruns? No, I'm just kidding. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I gotcha. Okay.
It's a good show. No, I mean, I think
because they don't have DVRs in the future or in the with the Watchers.
I don't know. Okay. I mean, it'll be so fascinating to see how the multiverse presents itself. I've said this probably too many times, but in the movies, you know, with Doctor Strange and Spider-Man coming up, I'm really excited about that. And hopefully the Watchers will make an appearance.
Well, it's just a challenge because it's exciting to see, but it's also a challenge, I think, from a film production and storytelling process. You know, I did read the other day that Feige called everybody involved with the writing and producing everything together. And they had this huge meeting that went like, I guess, forever. And they were just dealing with, okay, we've got this multiverse now. How is everything that everybody's working on going to tie into this, not tie into this?
Right.
You know,
not
what are you
contradict
doing that
each
we can't?
Other.
Right, right. See, keeping continuity straight, it just starts to get crazy.
Yeah, so. It's like the comics. And
yeah,
there's going to be things that don't, like the comics, that don't really fit together. And that's why Marvel came up with the No Prize, which is where if they mess up, then you send in a possible explanation for it, and then you get a No Prize, which is, I think, nothing, but it's No Prize.
The name kind of gives it away.
Yeah. All right. That is it for this episode. We'll take a little break. There's more to come. Stay with us.
He's a real nowhere man. Sitting in his nowhere land, making all his nowhere plans for nobody. Doesn't have a point of view, knows not where he's going to. Isn't he?
Okay, we're back, and it's time for the news. And there's a new little What If trailer that came out that. It's meant to promote the show. I think it mostly shows scenes from existing episodes, but there's flashes of a couple interesting moments that we haven't seen yet. And yeah. It does this. If you don't want to hear about stuff coming up, I mean, it's just little flashes, but if you really don't want to hear that, you should probably skip ahead because I'm going to talk about it a little bit, but it does seem to indicate that some of the storylines that felt unfinished might be revisited. Like mm-hmm. we see Ego, Peter Quill's father, in the Dairy Queen with Peter Quill, like sucking yep. energy from him. Yep. So that's cool. That could come back.
Yep.
Then we see Captain Carter, I think, leading an alternate version of the Avengers, maybe with Black Widow, yep. Thor, Star-Lord, and Gamora. I don't know about that one.
Isn't it the circle scene from the first Avengers? I think, yeah.
Yeah, so that's Captain Carter. I mean,
yep.
Seems like she'll be back this season. And then there's a young Thor standing next to what looks like this quote unquote evil version of Doctor Strange from episode 4 saying, "Zombies, right. Great idea." So he's talking zombies.
There a scene with the current Doctor Strange with the evil Doctor Strange, not evil Doctor yeah. Strange, but the, what they call the Supreme, or I don't remember what he's got a title.
I don't know.
Yeah. But anyway, Sorcerer they're talking Supreme. To each other. Yeah. Sorcerer Supreme is what he's called. But
wasn't that from that episode or no? From their episode?
Maybe it was.
I think it might have been. I don't know. But I
thought it was new. It looked new to me, but maybe not.
Maybe not. I don't know. But this says to me that they are planting some seeds for future storylines yes. here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is cool. I like that. It's gotta be hard to decide what to pick yeah. back up on and what to leave alone.
It's not clear whether it's for this half, this next half, or whether it's for some other future point
right,
next year
right.
or whatever.
Next thing, there's a Captain Carter toy coming out, or collectible figure.
Oh, yeah,
they say,
I saw that.
By
yeah,
Hot Toys.
Yeah.
Looks cool. It's got
It's 1/6, right?
1/6.
Yeah, it's 1/6. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Super detailed. It looks like the cartoon style. It's $235. That's the downside. Is that normal?
Yeah, all the. Yeah, the Sideshow Collectibles 1/6 figures are always now used. When I used to get them, they were about $150 to $200. Now they're from $200 to $400 or $500.
Holy cow!
Depending on what they come with. I think there was one recently that they just did with Mando, and he's also got the child, and he's got the child crib thing, and he's got a couple. And it's astronomical. It's like $900.
Oh my god! Do you have some of those?
I have a number of 1/6 figures, but they're from, you know, I've got like the first Cap from First Avenger. Mm-hmm. I've got a Michael Keaton Batman. I got the first Iron Man. But after that, I got a couple Star Wars clones. So I used to be into them, but they got too expensive.
Yeah.
And, I got too poor. So yeah, between those two things, yeah.
So last thing here, you guys might know about Kirk's tribute art. It's amazing. It's kind of what Kirk, one of the things that Kirk's known for. He does for various shows and other properties and things that he's into. And he has a Walking Dead tribute art weekend coming up. And why don't you talk a little bit about what that's about?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. It's September 24th, 25th, and 26th. I'm going to release my newest season, some new tributes that come from season 10 and a couple from season 11. I haven't done any tributes to episodes in quite a while, mainly because of the pandemic and the fact that shows came to an end. And I'm kind of trying to see if this is an alternative way to get tributes to people at this time, as opposed to
usually we do the conventions.
Yeah, exactly. So,
do you want to reveal any of the ones you're working on, or do we want it to be a surprise?
No, I'd rather it be a surprise.
Okay, cool.
At this point, but there'll be some bundle and set deals, you know, and then I'm going to offer original sketch art incentives. So if people get sets of some of them, you know, they'll different sets on different days will have different incentives. There's also going to be an exclusive event, you know, poster that I'm only going to print up for this, very limited quantity. It'll be numbered signed. So if people want to get that, this will only be during this 3 days of the promotion. Won't be available anywhere else at any other time. So
awesome.
Kind of cool stuff.
And Kirk is going to, since it's Walking Dead themed, Kirk's going to join me and Lucy on Walking Dead Cast next time to talk about this next episode. And then we'll be announcing a contest where you can win all six of the posters that Kirk's doing. So if you want to get in on that, listen to the next episode of the Walking Dead Cast. That'll be fun.
Looking forward to it. Yeah.
All right. That's it for the news. Let's get into some listener feedback.
All right. So the first listener feedback we have is from Shay Weed. Shay Wide. I knew I was going to blow that. I'm so sorry.
Shay, tell us how to pronounce your name. Wide. I don't know either.
Let's see. Shay says, love this episode. Tony was so much different without the capture by terrorists. Killmonger's masterful manipulation of events makes him one of the best villains in the MCU. This is yet another episode that I want to see what happens next. This season is everything I wanted it to be. Yeah, I agree. I think this maybe even did a better job than the Black Panther movie did in showing how masterful, to use Shay's words, Killmonger's manipulation skills were.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he had thought this through to
he was
like,
in command
the
whole
degree.
Time.
Yeah. Everything
worked out just the way he wanted.
Yep. Just the way he wanted.
Yep. Emily Rouse says, I knew Shuri would figure it out, but why is everything with T'Challa always about death? Between the MCU movies and these episodes, T'Challa is always dying, almost dying, or getting eaten by Wanda. Probably wouldn't normally notice, but in hindsight, it's brutal. Yeah, I mean, these what-if episodes, a lot of them are dying, but you're right. T'Challa in the movie was about that, too, going into this after realm and everything. And then, of course, Chadwick Boseman. Yeah, so brutal.
Well, I think that a big part of the Black Panther, not history, but...
mythos, kind of.
Mythos, good word, is this spirit world. And the connection to past, you know, Black Panthers and stuff. So in order to get there, you got to die or almost die.
Yeah.
So, I think that's why that may be happening.
It's part of it.
Penny Lennox says, unpopular opinion. King T'Chaka is not a great king. My first version of that sentence was less PG. Are we PG? I hope not, because I think I've swore already a couple times.
Yeah, you can
the
do
one
R.
thing about... Oh, okay. I
R's fine.
The one thing about Black Panther that bugged me was how he left that kid behind in Oakland for no good reason. And then in this episode, he's all, hey, we were led to believe that about his brother not having any children. He 100% knew about that kid. The Forrest Whitaker character was undercover with Najobu. Nobody questions him, though. Then T'Chaka decides he trusts Eric and just opens up the force field and reveals Wakanda to the world for the first time in centuries. Bad king. Yeah, I think we've talked about it, it just didn't seem consistent with how he would have been.
I mean, in the movies, I think he was doing everything he was doing because that's what he thought he had to do to protect his people. And that was keeping Wakanda a secret, which I think that's why he left Eric Stevens a Killmonger.
Yes. He wanted to keep it a secret.
Yeah. As harsh as that is, at least there seemed to be a reason for it. But I agree with not agreeing. And by the end, he opened it up to everybody.
Right. And I think that was good writing because essentially, without that plot twist, you don't have the moral authority for T'Challa to step up and say, I'm going to correct the wrongs of past leaders, you know, and I'm going to do it differently. And it doesn't make T'Chaka great, but it's important that, he is human and he was doing the best he could at his time, but he needed to do better.
Right. Yeah. So Penny has a point. Yeah. He wasn't the best.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Nathan Eshelman says, one, it was good to see Rhodes look like Don Cheadle in a scene that could have taken place during the first Iron Man. It adds character continuity, much like Ruffalo's Hulk a few episodes ago was fitting into a Norton Hulk setting. Two, I like that they reference Killmonger liking anime because one of Michael B. Jordan's outfits in Black Panther is inspired by his love for Dragon Ball Z. I think it's the same one he was wearing here with the chest plate.
Yeah.
And three, poor Tony Stark can't catch a break. He's died in all of his What If appearances up to this point.
Not to mention the MCU. Right.
There too, everywhere. And I heard, I don't know if this is true, but I read that Robert Downey Jr. like unfriended everybody that has to do with Marvel, not because he doesn't want to be friends, but he just really wants to make a separation from this whole thing and move on to the next phase.
Really?
I don't know if that's true. That's just what I read, but I know that he, I think he really does, did want to just move on, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. No, I don't think he has bad feelings about it. I think he's just like...
No, he's just, he's just ready to do other things.
Yeah, do other things, yeah.
Yeah, well, if Dr. Doolittle is any sign of what's to come, it's hopefully we'll see Tony back.
I know, resurrect Iron Man.
That's right, from alternate universe.
Yeah, man, he needs to do something else.
I mean, that multiverse gives us the ability to do that. I mean, you could, 10 years from now say, hey, we're going to have you, would you want to come back and just do one part in one movie where you're, you walk through this portal or whatever.
Yeah, totally. All right, we got a couple of calls. Here's Steve Brown.
Hey, Kirk and Jason. This is Steve, and this is for What If Killmonger Rescued Tony Stark. I'm going to have to watch this one a few times, I think, to really get it and understand it. And maybe, Kirk, maybe you can help out with this question. There's something different about the animation, or did it go back and forth between kind of two different kind of animation styles, it seemed like to me? And it wasn't exactly the same as the rest of the series. So I don't really know this character, Killmonger, at all. So not sure. But yeah, I'll watch this one a few more times and can't wait to hear you guys talk about it. All right, talk to you later.
Steve's a great guy. I did the Panels to Pixels podcast with him and Mark, and it was great, and it was a lot of fun. And I think Steve's picking up on what I was mentioning as well. You know, I think if you're into comic art, if you're into animation art, if you're into the visual and graphics of it as much as the story, there was something about this that looked different. And I chalk it up to it having more of a direct feeling of CGI treatment. And that's common when they want to do things like motorized robots and things that are going to, they kind of create the shell or this construct, and then they duplicate it and, the shading on it and everything else. And, I think they put a lot into that, and it just kind of shortchanged the rest of it. So I'm not sure exactly what was going on, but I've definitely felt like that. And then, like I pointed out before, I think there were a number of scenes that were simply traced. You know, the environments were traced, and it just felt like that.
Yeah, I mean, you noticed it, and so did Steve. So there's something going on there for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Steve. I'm not losing my mind.
Steve, you should watch Black Panther. It's a great movie.
Yeah, definitely. You're missing out. It's one of the best. It's in the top, at least top 10.
Yeah, I agree. Here's Greg Schwamm.
Hey, how's podcasting? This is Greg. I absolutely loved this episode. And don't get me wrong, I said that about Marvel Zombies too, but this was amazing. This was fantastic. This wasn't a half hour of television. This wasn't a half hour possibility. This was the first half of a movie that I need to see the end of. And I mean, the actors, Michael B. Jordan was fantastic. Even the guy who played Iron Man, and I guess he also voiced in the video games. He was on point. Most of the cast came back. Chadwick Boseman, kind of filming a death scene, another death scene. It's kind of, that's not the best, but I mean, it was great to hear him again. But like this was every other episode that we've seen has had like a sting at the end, like, oh, well, this is where there's a little bit of hope or maybe a little bit of doom or whatever. But this is the first one that I'm like, no, I need to see what happens. This was the first half of a theatrical production, and I need to see how this plays out, because this was a movie that we didn't get to see the half of. This, like, this is Infinity War, and if we don't get Endgame, what the ever living fuck? All right, look forward to hearing you guys talk about it. Bye.
I feel like that was a positive review, except if we don't get to see what happens, then it's kind of a negative review.
Then it's going to be a negative review.
God damn it.
Well, I think Greg agrees that there's it looks like a cliffhanger, or if not, it should be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. That is our show. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Thanks, Kirk. Fun again, as usual.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Which one did you cover over on Panels to Pixels?
We did the Marvel Zombies, which was that's great.
Fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
That out.
Yeah, yeah. I hope they invite me back because I did. I am worried I may have just talked too much. I was waiting for them to go, dude, shut up. Okay, shut up.
Hey, it's a podcast. That's what you do.
But they're really great guys, and I had a lot of fun.
Mark and Steve.
Yeah, and I was really enthusiastic about that episode.
Nice. Well, if you guys want to write in or record a message, send it in, you can email us at talk@podcastica.com. We put up a post each week on our Facebook at facebook.com/podcastica, and all our other podcasts are over on podcastica.com. Kirk and Lucy and I, as I mentioned, will be on Walking Dead Cast coming up, so check that out. You can find out how to win some of those cool posters. Also, I'm scheduled to interview Paola Lazzaro, who plays Princess, tomorrow. I'm excited about that. And I'm not sure when I'll put that out yet, but it'll be soon. And next episode of this podcast is What If Podcastica teamed up with TV Podcast Industries, because it's going to be me and Derek and the guys from TV Podcast Industries talking about the next episode of What If, which I have no idea what it is going to be because they don't tell you ahead of time.
No, they don't. You can also learn more about my TWD Tribute Art Weekend by visiting studiokm.com, following me on Twitter at BatmanKM, and on Instagram at BatmanKM as well. And I hope people will check out my work.
Yeah,
next weekend.
Definitely check it out. StudioKM.com. You will not be sorry that you went over there and checked it out. Thanks, Kirk.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
Months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.